It's the late 80s, I'm a young impressionable kid, and my dad comes home with a stack of tapes from the video store. One of those movies is Conan the Barbarian. That movie opened my eyes to something, and that something is that apparently I like watching giant shirtless muscular dudes swinging swords. Well, fast forward to 2007 and I see a trailer where things have escalated. Now there's hundreds of muscular dudes wrecking shit, kicking guys into wells, and saying cool stuff like, "Then we shall fight in the shade." Well, what was I to do? Of course, get my ass to the theater as fast as possible. Oh, and in case you are wondering the exact number of awesome shirtless muscle dudes, it was 300. Welcome to the Hold Up.
Each month we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years, watch it, and decide, does it hold up? I'm John Nelson.
I'm John Longino.
I'm Nicholas North.
Hey, the King of the North is with us.
Yeah. All hail the King in the North.
That's the wrong franchise, guys. This is a different fantasy series.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh.
You shall not pass.
Yep. Dumbledore was there. It was great.
Nick North, everyone, one of the co-hosts of the podcast Joe Blow Gamer, actually one of the three co-hosts of the Joe Blow Gamer podcast, being that John Longino is the...
let's not upgrade me to host. I'm a friend that fucks around every now and then. I'm not one of the hosts.
The slow takeover. It's a parasite. Yes.
frequent collaborator to Trevor Carley and Nick North's Joe Blow Gamer.
Yeah, it's a podcast that we do once every 10 years or something along those lines. But we talk about video games and stuff.
It's like Haley's Comet.
Yes,
exactly. For
podcasts. Yeah, you got to keep your eyes open and really check the calendars. It's a video game podcast for dads and people that don't have time to play video games and what works for us and what doesn't. It's fun. Check it out.
Nice.
Check it out at joeblowgamer.com.
Thank you.
Wow.
This is why he's part of it.
Yeah. Well, it's appropriate we're talking about video games because basically we're going to watch a video game today. When Nick heard that we were doing 300, I think we had actually promised him years ago that if we ever decided to do 300 that we would pull him in, and we had totally forgotten, but Nick did not. He heard we were doing this.
Yeah, it was a random conversation, and you're like, yeah, I think we're doing 300, and I was like, ooh.
300?
Yeah. He woke up for the first time in 5 days and exactly. said, I want in on that, and sure enough, here he is. So we will get to 300 in just a moment, but I need to remind you all to send us emails at holduppodcast@gmail.com. We didn't receive any this month.
Oh, no.
Let me solicit for some emails, because we had discussed, Mr. Nelson, about doing a grab bag for the year 2020.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to put a big hunk of bait out there, and I'm gonna now declare that our grab bag should be... Star Wars themed.
Well, now, so, hold on. Let's just say it should be more Star Wars themed than usual, because we end up talking about Star Wars in the grab bags.
Yes.
Almost that and like Batman v Superman.
But this is what I want from our listeners. I want all your Star Wars questions and queries. Any random ass question you want to ask us. Who do we think Baby Yoda is? What do we think of the new movie? What do we think of the prequels? Like, whatever you want. Hit us up and we will go on for a long time about that.
Oh, yeah. You'll get 4 or 5 hours out of that.
Yeah. You know, all roads lead to Rome. All conversations lead to Star Wars.
Yes.
When it comes to this group. Yeah.
Much like another empire.
Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of empires, we got the Lord of the Inland Empire, Nick North, to come and help us out with 300. Nick North, tell us, when was the first time, man, maybe the last time you saw 300?
I saw 300 when it came out in theaters, and like I said, it was a trailer for something that just looked super rad. I had read the Frank Miller comic as well, but I wasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, Nelson, that was a bit of a touchstone comic, but not like huge. It wasn't
it wasn't like Dark Knight Returns
or
anything.
But. Right, exactly. But because Frank Miller had already made a name for himself, it was just another thing that people followed, like, oh, this is cool too.
Well, I think also because it was not about superheroes, it allowed civilians to come in off the street and be like, oh, well, I want to try one of these comic book things. It's like, well, this is historical, so it's okay to read it.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if a number of listeners out there would be like, oh, I never knew that this one was a comic, that kind of thing. Like, believe it or not, 300 was a comic book movie. But I saw it in the theater, and to know something about me, I love movies, I love going to the theater, but I don't usually see something twice in the theater.
Ooh.
This was one of those movies that, like, the second it was done, I was like, I went and talked to somebody about it, and like, really? It's good? And it's like, yes, we should go right now. And I saw it, like, twice in 2 days. I was just...
You were in for 600.
Yes, exactly. This movie was just such... It's up my alley of the, as I said, dumb, fun, big dudes just wrecking shit. It was the kind of thing that, like, I got done watching it and was like, I should work out more. I'm like, be a man about this shit. And it really did have a weird mark on movies at that time. Like, a lot of parodies of, like, This Is Sparta.
Oh, sure.
Kicks the dude and... It, all that stuff.
It certainly, yeah, it forced its way into pop culture.
Yes,
like once it happened, it couldn't unhappen.
Right.
What was that terrible Not Another Whatever movie? Didn't they do one for 300?
Yes.
What was
it
called? Like Remember the Spartans or something like that? Or
I think that's right. No, I think it's Remember the Spartans.
Instead of Remember the Titans.
Sure, that makes
sorry to remind us all of that horrible time. But that is how much it went up there.
Yeah. Fair enough. That's a pretty decent pun title, if you will. I don't.
How
I've never
dare
seen.
You
I've
compliment
never,
that film.
Well, actually,
I've never seen that movie, and it looked terrible. But that's. I'll give them the name on that. Titans, Spartans. Yeah.
Well, honestly, I think the biggest legacy that it had is it gave Gerard Butler a career.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether deservedly or not.
I was waiting to bring this up. Nelson and I have joked about this, that like, oh, I love Gerard Butler. And he says, really? And what? And it's like, he's been in lots of good stuff. And then you look at his IMDb and he's got nothing.
Oh,
It's tricked you into thinking that like...
No, he literally has like a 2 decades long career of the guy that was in 300.
Yes.
And he's been in a million
other
things.
And it works wonderfully for him. Because again, in my head, I'm like, Gerard Butler's great. He can do no wrong. Oh, wait, except for the 25 romantic comedies.
Right. Well, okay. Which of us has seen 300 the least? It's probably me.
Probably me. I've only seen it one time.
You've seen it one time? Okay.
Yes.
I think I've seen it a couple times. So since you've seen it the least, John Longino, tell us what 300 is
about. Sure. 300, from my memory, is based off of real, in quotes, historical event. I don't know
heavy quotes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know the authenticity of the actual event, but it seems like a sort of real life historical slash kind of legendary story about in ancient Greece. Sparta, the city, had this elite group of fighters, and there's a Persian invasion and an army of thousands coming. And I guess they offer to the city, like, hey, you know, bend the knee and we'll spare you or whatever. And I remember very famously, and Gerard Butler in the movie just goes, "We are Sparta," and then kicks the guy down a well or something.
Kicks the messenger down.
Or This Is Sparta.
This is
Sparta. Right.
I love that you said very famously
and
then misquoted.
I mean, whatever. It's just the general idea. But he goes, "This is Sparta," kills the guy, basically says, "Come and get us." And the idea is that 300 soldiers go to some kind of ravine or like cliffside. I think it's a valley.
That's like a choke point.
And then just stand there, and here comes the Persian army, and it's literally an hour and a half of just people invading and fight scenes. That's my memory of it.
Right.
And,
pretty much.
I believe this is the first Zack Snyder film I ever saw. I actually didn't see the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Oh.
Because I was a film snob who was like, that's not the Romero movie. No, no, no. I've since many years later seen it. It's actually not that bad. But this was my introduction to Zack Snyder. So this
is... Well, much like Gerard Butler, this like tricked us into thinking Zack Snyder was a good director.
Well, there's almost no dialogue to speak of, so that doesn't hurt.
Right.
That it's essentially just an action movie, like you said, and very similar to a barbarian film or something. I would even say Conan probably has more plot than something like 300 for sure.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Which is not an easy feat, but... Essentially,
I mean, making a perfect film is not an easy feat. Somehow managed to do that with Conan the Barbarian.
All hail John Milius.
Yes.
But at this time, Zack Snyder's kind of slow-mo stutter, you know, go slow, go fast thing wasn't this tired, played out, I've seen it 100 times deal. I remember this being the first time I sort of saw that
right.
in a movie, and I found that very exciting, this sort of frenetic, fast, slow, kind of zoom in and out, especially with all the combat.
Well, he definitely, like, he took the opportunity for a movie that, like you say, there's not a lot of plot and there's not much more than just action heaped upon action. And he used, I don't think he'd even done it like that much in Dawn of the Dead. He had not done this like super stylistic.
Not to that extent. Yeah.
And then like once he did it, he never let it go. But like this was the first movie where he's like, well, it's super style over substance, which almost the comic book is kind of the same way.
Yes. Yeah.
So he was just sort of like, yeah, I mean, he was just sort of reflecting the comic book, which made, again, it tricked me into thinking, oh, he's real thoughtful. Each project he will do will better reflect the material he's working with. Then we just found out, oh, he's just going to use the same tricks over and over.
Right. But it's just because he got to work off of the greatest storyboard made, because it was the, I don't know who did the art on 300.
I think Frank Miller did.
Did he? Yeah. It's just,
it's one of the last things he did. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. So man's talented on many fronts, but yes, if there's nothing else to take away from 300, it's got gorgeous art and just, well, it's like, you call it cinematography? What do you call it in comic books? But just like,
the mise-en-scene.
Yes, sure, that. Of just the layout of a lot of the shots. A lot of huge panels in that thing.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of single-page panels and
well,
stuff
I think,
like that.
I can't remember if the original comic was this way, but they when they reprinted it, they did it in like a super cinematic, like book.
Yeah, the original was that way too.
Well, Frank Miller had decided, like, I mean, he started doing it with Dark Knight Returns, but he was doing Daredevil, and that was like semi-realistic, and then he did Dark Knight, which he started experimenting with this style of his. Now he's just completely like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's sort of like what you see in 300, which is just like weird imagery and stuff that, you know, he's trying to evoke with images more than plot nowadays, it seems like. And Sin City was another way that he did that too.
Definitely.
He was like evoking like film noir, but really like pushing it.
Did the Sin City movie come out a year or two before 300? I feel like
it did.
It did, because I think that sort of paved the way for, I had, honestly, as someone who wasn't that into comic books, I'd never heard of Frank Miller until the Sin City movie.
Oh, okay.
And so having his name attached to 300, I was able to go, oh, okay, all right, it's kind of like Sin City. And then the super stylized look of it, obviously very comic book influence, I think maybe that movie doesn't get made without Sin City.
Might not. I mean, yeah, Rodriguez can, you know, Robert Rodriguez can kind of do whatever he wants. So if he's like, oh, I'm going to do Sin City.
He used to. I don't know about
well,
anymore.
I don't know, man. If he's directing James Cameron movies, I still think he got a foot in the door somewhere.
He always finds his way out, but this isn't the Robert Rodriguez podcast. Maybe that's something we can cover
later. Oh, we need
later.
To get to him one day.
Yeah,
I'm telling you,
definitely.
There's words need be spoken about Robert Rodriguez. But anyway, Nick North, why did you like it so much? What was so awesome about?
Here's the thing. This movie, well, one, it much like, let's see, The Lion King recently kind of got a lot of crap for being like a shot-for-shot remake sort of thing. This is one of those things I think got a lot of credit from comic book fans because it is, again, like the comic book. And like I said, it had such gorgeous art, and he just used that as a storyboard. It was just like, okay, well, we need this shot. Like literally down to a very famous part where they're like pushing the guys off the cliff and it's a silhouette behind the sunset.
Right.
Stuff.
Yeah. And it's all slow-mo. So you can see it sort of like a comic book panel. Yeah.
Right. So, but the truth being, I don't like, this is again where I think Zack Snyder conned us all, because I think this, maybe if Zack Snyder was in post a lot, this movie is made in post.
Mm.
There is a lot of, it's the devil's in the details with this movie as far as the style goes, and specifically the sound. One of the things I liked the most about this movie is it's every time anyone does something, there's like a thunderclap. Like, you know, Leonidas like says, you know, like, we're going to do this, and he hits his fist against his hand, and it's a thunderclap. And like anytime somebody puts their spear down, it's this boom and an echo. And anytime the guys go, oh, it's this like echoing, like it sounds like there's millions of them and stuff.
Right.
And as Longino said, it was that frenetic, like slow down, speed up and stuff. I think I'm just a sucker for dudes killing dudes and
sword and sandals.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly that, sword and sandals and the underdog story of it all. And there's some pretty decent performances in there as well.
Right.
There's the guy, there's somebody sort of telling the story, if I remember correctly.
Oh, was it? Now, oh, and let me guess. It was a, my master wandered the wasteland.
Yes, ancient Hyboria.
Yes.
Oh, I mean Sparta.
Man named Mako, and he was incredible.
Right.
Again, perfect film. no, it was the guy that played Faramir in Lord of the Rings, I believe.
Oh, yes.
I'm digging.
Not Sean Bean.
Yes.
But I'm the
digging,
other guy.
I'm digging six layers deep of bizarre references.
I got nothing on him. But well, yeah, this is, you're right. He is in the movie.
Yeah.
This is like, it's taking from all the previous like Sword and Sandals movies and then like paving the way for the next round, which is Game of Thrones, right? Because Cersei's in this, right? The Lena Headley?
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, let's not forget, this movie is packed with people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you guys don't remember, we're going to watch and there's about 25, like, I think Carl Urban's in there.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Slightly.
Dominic West is in it, right? Yeah. The guy from The Wire?
Which one is he? I'm sorry.
He's the white
guy
in The Wire.
He's McNulty from The Wire.
Yes.
The main guy.
Yes. I think
he's
in
there.
There.
At some point.
And Steve Jobs is in there.
Who plays Xerxes?
This is a reference that only you and I are going to get, but in Love Actually, you know, the Spanish guy that she's in love with,
yes. Oh, that's Xerxes.
God, who cares? Fuck that movie. No, I'm kidding.
That's
wow.
him. Yeah. He's had the weird little career. I think he's been in some other random stuff, but that's all I knew him from.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, I guess I should drop the knowledge on what I've done with 300, which is not much. I saw it on home video, so I haven't seen it in its idealized form.
Oh, God.
But I loved it even on home video. I was like, oh, I see why everybody's going nuts over it. And that's why, you know, Zack Snyder suddenly, like, careened to the top of everybody's, like, masculinity charts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of 300 that I was like, oh, man, he's doing Watchmen next. I'm fucking on board. And then he did Watchmen. And I was like, oh, man, that was... There's something weird about that movie. He did it, but he didn't do it somehow.
Right. But it somehow works in 300.
Right.
But doesn't work in Watchmen.
Watchmen needs like a, you know, a gentle, subtle hand, which is not what I would say Zack Snyder is. I mean, it's not. I'm not saying this as an insult. I don't think that's his strength. I actually like Zack Snyder's style very much, even through, like, you know, Justice League and stuff like that. It's just that his style is very now rarely matched with the kind of material I think is appropriate for that. So, I mean,
I wish, he does seem like a guy that has a style in it. If he could just get something that wasn't an existing property already, which I know doesn't exist now anymore.
Sure.
But, you know, Zack Snyder directs The Marriage Story, you know, The Marriage Story 2.
He did do his own original work, which was what? Sucker Punch?
Oh, yeah.
I believe that Longinot.
Well, no, that was based off of a comic book already, too, isn't
it? No,
no. It's his own original work, I think.
I mean, it looks like it should be, but
I take
not.
Back everything I just said. Never
but,
mind.
But if you want to hear some words about Sucker Punch, you should check out the other Trevor Carley podcast,
Sure.
Trevor Loves Everything, with John Longinot eviscerating Sucker Punch.
Hey, some people like it. That's fine. I'm not one of those people. But yeah, me and Trevor talked about it on Trevor Loves Everything. Check it out on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, this is just become like
it
a
needs to be a we need to just start our own podcast
this
family.
This is also incestual now. Yeah. It's just anyway.
I do think there is something I should talk about with 300, specifically related to my wife and my opinions of the movie. It's kind of a, bear with me, gentlemen. It's a little bit of a
story. Do I need to take back everything I said about masculinity and how great it is?
No. Specifically, I don't think this is any much a secret that Frank Miller has some sort of kind of racial background issues in terms of his past.
Oh, that's true.
In terms of some people have called him a racist.
Yes.
But it's interesting. So I had very much the experience you guys had when I first saw 300 back in 2007. I had not yet met my wife, which for anyone that doesn't know, she is Indian. But I saw 300, loved it. I was like, yeah, this is great. It's fucking amazing. I met my wife in 2008. Very early on, we like movies and stuff. 300 came up with her and I said, yeah, 300, that was a lot of fun. And then she goes, 300? That movie's fucking terrible. And I'm like, oh, really? Why? What? And then she's like, that's the most racist movie I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, oh, really? What do you mean? And she's like, well, the invading Persian Empire all look like monsters and have fangs for teeth. And she was like, I did not like that at all. I found that horribly insulting and going against these big buff white men who are,
right.
And I had never been challenged in that way on that movie by any means. I was just like, yeah, you know, it's great. And I kind of sat back and thought about it. And I like really didn't have any defense to speak of. I was like, that's a really good point, actually. I sort of thought about it. By the way, it's totally a coincidence that we happen to be watching 300 in the month that, you know, maybe we might be going to war with Iran. Speaking of the Persian Empire.
Totally coincidental. Yeah.
But I only mention it because I have family that now has of Persian descent. I have Indian family. And it's like totally changed my perspective on these kind of movies. And I have not seen 300 since I first saw it. I think in part because of this conversation with my wife where I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't sound good at all. And it's sort of colored my view of the movie since then.
Right.
It's this very racially charged movie that I didn't see or notice as a white guy.
Right.
Because I was like, yeah, it's white guys killing people. Sounds good to me. And then, yeah, her sort of point of like, why do they have to be monsters? Why do they have to have like multiple arms and fangs and look like vampires and stuff? I'm like, that's a really fair point. I don't really know why that should be that way. I know the comics that way. So.
Right. Well, now there's two things going on. One is that Frank Miller took a real hard conservative turn after 9/11.
Right.
He also put out another piece of art called Holy Terror, which was supposed to be originally Holy Terror Batman, wherein Batman fights Osama bin Laden to the death or some shit like that. And DC said, no, thank you. We don't want this. And he said, well, then I'll just put it out myself and make it a generic Batman. And he put it out anyway. And so, yeah, Frank Miller has very strong opinions on matters.
Well, and I think the movie coming out in 2007, I mean, it's 6 years away from when 9/11 happened. And
right.
I think there is a subconscious thing of like, the beautiful white men defending us from the horde of invading,
right.
you know, others, I think is not a coincidence.
Now, on the other hand, one of the things I actually like...
When was 300 the comic book written, though?
1998. So
that certainly the comic predates 9/11.
Right.
Yes, but, and perhaps predates his opinions, who knows. But here's the other thing about that stylistic choice, divorced from certain perspectives. To me, I thought it was like, well, the whole movie is from the Spartans' point of view, so anybody outside of their, you know, purview is a monster. To me, I'm actually like, on the one hand, I understand why someone would say, well, that's racist and that's, you know, it makes, you know, my people look uncool or whatever. On the other hand, I'm like, well, it's not so much that the movie believes that, it's just that these people see other people as inhuman, and I'm down for like perspective. Analysis, you know what I mean? I'm down for like a subjective point of view.
It's so weird in this day and age and the age I am right now to hear those. It is one of those wonderful, like, fuck, I didn't even like even remotely think of it from that direction.
Well, and why, course, why would we?
And of course, it's just this like gut reaction of like, what? No, that's. But it's like, okay, no. Like, I'm trying to think of defenses, but then I'm trying to think of, like, why am I defending it? It's like,
Well, because at the time, when I saw it, I mean, I'll be totally honest, I didn't even know enough about history to even know who they were fighting.
Right.
I was like, oh, it's Spartans. I know they're fighting Persians. That doesn't mean much to me. Like, oh, they could be monsters, whatever.
Yeah. Right.
And then my wife is the one that had the perspective of like, no, those are Persians. Those are like Asian people. They do not look like this at all. Why do they look this way? I think she didn't even really have a problem with the fighting or anything. It was more that depiction.
Right.
Like, they are monsters.
Well, I think
it help at all to know that they won? Like,
no.
Well, I mean, they make Xerxes look like, I mean, he is straight up like he's like asexual. He's got some weird shit going on with him.
Also,
I mean,
like 10 feet tall.
Yes. I mean, yeah. he's basically a sorceress, like inhuman. And I think.
Because that's the interesting part is like we're hung up on a lot of the monster stuff, but I'm trying to rack my brain. There is a scene where there's very much like monsters, but the minute-to-minute soldiers are just people.
Right, but
they're still the villains. Like, and it's a weird thing because
I feel like they have sharpened teeth and they're, you know, crawling around like
again.
Like
I think that's like one group of them.
Yeah. Well, there's
like,
also
it always comes in these like waves of like things they're fighting, and there's like the mystics, and then you know there's these rhinos that are like, because that's the thing, is everything is upped into fantastical. Like, they fight an elephant, but it's like again, like Lord of the Rings, it's like an Oliphant where it's got like
right.
six
tusks. Well, and again, they hadn't, I mean, if you had never seen an elephant, it would look like a monster to you
yeah.
in that time. And,
yeah.
and that's part of what I'm talking about is like, it's taking somebody's perspective and being like, oh, well, I see, you know, what you're looking at is another human being, but what you're seeing is a monster trying to kill you. And this is largely intent, and who knows if we can figure out intent by watching the movie. Because another thing I was thinking too is like the Spartans themselves, they're our heroes, quote unquote, but they are also assholes.
Right.
And they're vicious and they're cruel and, you know,
they're anti-homosexual in one
yes,
moment.
They are homophobic.
Homophobic,
yes.
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with them where you look at them and say, well, like, well, if these are our heroes, how bad can the villains be? But it's we've faced this before, like Gone with the Wind is what I'm thinking specifically.
Oh,
it's like
yeah.
people who are so dirty on all sides, it's just like it's hard for you to get a toehold. I'm like, well, did they intend to make everybody look like a dirtbag, or is it just like, no, they were just dirtbags and everybody was sympathizing with dirtbags at a certain time?
Yeah, and it's an interesting like it's an interesting task to storytellers going forward of like, how do you make villains? Like, because villains are always false, like, stereotypes of some variety, right? I mean, like, real good villains, like, if you're a well-attuned writer, but
well,
throughout history.
Sure. I think there's nothing wrong with someone being an antagonist. I think it's just, there was something in the representation that I didn't see that my wife saw
yes,
and was
no,
deeply
and that's,
offended by.
Yeah.
And I sort of, in hindsight, looking back on it.
And I love that three white guys are going to fix this now.
Yeah.
So don't worry.
We're gonna,
on right. the case.
But,
yeah.
but looking back on it, I didn't have much to sort of retort. Like,
right.
I sort of, it shifted my perspective on the movie. And I was like, that's actually a very fair argument. And I haven't seen it since. So the reason I bring it up is because I think it's very much going to color like my viewing of the movie. I don't actually know. I haven't seen it since I first saw it. I have flashes of memory of what she's talking about, but it over in the years since I saw 300, a lot of things came in line where like Zack Snyder's movies got a lot worse. Frank Miller got a lot crazier.
Right.
So my desire to defend 300 like really kind of fell off, and
yeah.
then I've been able to kind of blow it off as like, yeah, that racist shit. And so I'm actually kind of interested to see it again. Like, oh, is it good? Like maybe I'm being too harsh on it.
That's interesting.
But I it's weird. When I first saw it, I loved it, and now my thoughts about it are like very negative.
I mean, thankfully, again, Conan has no spots. Of,
yeah, no.
I mean, it's
no sexism,
it's, yeah, it's,
no racism.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah. clean as a whistle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was wondering at what point in my life would I hit the point where it's like my kids would be ashamed of me. I think I'm hitting that point now. It's like, you watched what?
Yeah.
Right.
You enjoyed that?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good job, old man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've gotten to that point. Nick North, do you think that 300 is going to hold up?
Well, I don't know. I feel like an anchor's been tied around my neck this time.
And now we're staring at you.
I didn't mean to bring out the albatross
of
racial tension.
Yes.
But, you know, you can make
truthfully
your
and honestly, I think it will hold up. I still think it's a fucking rad action movie. And with new eyes open, it might have some sour to it. But I still think it's pretty fucking awesome.
All right. Well, fair point. Racist. Longino.
Jesus, I didn't go that far.
Longino, do you think 300 is going to hold up?
I don't think so.
Okay.
One, because I'm no longer in my 20s. I'm in my late 30s. And while I can still be a teenager at times, I think that's all the movie has, is kind of that teenage aggression and angst and fun.
Mm.
So that coupled with my wife's disdain for the movie has probably colored my point of view. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe I'll have a good time, but I suspect it's that I'm not going to like it.
Also good point. Virtue signaling. Okay. I will say that it's going to hold up because I have no other good reasons not to. And I'm a hypocrite. So there you go. So now we all have our reasons. It looks like we have a prediction for it to hold up. We'll see. This is
can it hold the line?
Can three dudes hold the line against the changing of the times? We will find out when we go watch 300. We'll be right back.
We Spartans are descended from Hercules himself, taught never to retreat, never to surrender, taught that death in the battlefield is the greatest glory he could achieve in his life. Spartans, the finest soldiers the world has ever known.
the ground. A thousand nations of the Persian Empire descend upon you.
What must a king do to save his world?
Instead, ask yourself, what should a free man do?
Threaten my people with slavery and death.
This is madness.
Madness. This is Sparta!
We will stand and fight.
A new age has begun.
An age of freedom. And all who know the 300 Spartans give their last breath to defend it. Tonight, we dine in hell! Give them nothing, but take from them everything!
We're in for one wild night.
This will not be over quickly. You will not enjoy this. We are back from the Battle of Thermopylae.
We are Sparta! Oh, wait. This is Sparta.
Okay, sorry, well,
sorry, guys.
Before we leap in, while it's still fresh in our heads, we have a lot of corrections to make, I think. Number one, well, for me, I think, Lena Headey, and not Lena Headley, how I think I pronounced her name earlier.
Sure.
The Cersei.
Egregious mistake.
Yes, well, let's start small. Yeah. And what other things did we
also
forget?
A thousand pardons to the makers of Meet the Spartans, the zany parody movie, not Remember the Spartans. I was trying to punch up and make better their idea.
Well, again, that's why I thought it sounded better. I was like,
you were right, Nick.
Instead of Meet the Parents, it's Meet the Spartans.
Get it?
It's like remembering the whatever.
Yeah.
Initial reactions. Nick, you're our guest.
The movie was longer than I remembered. There's a lot of editing that could have happened in it. Like, for what it is trying to tell, it could be a very short 90, if not, like, you know, 80 minutes.
This is a complicated story, Nick. It needs many hours to unfold.
Tight 90 minutes.
Yeah, real tight 90 minutes. There's a lot of mistreatment of the bad rape scene and stuff like that as we led our things in. But overall, I still found plenty to enjoy. Don't rake me over the coals. I felt like the energy in the room was maybe not agreeing with me.
No, I actually, well, I was trying to like give it its due, but at the same time, like look at it with a modern eye and see what I could place in it. And there's a lot of stuff that I'm like, wow, this movie is really like stylistic and it's got a real visual flair. It's still got that in, you know, just it tons of that, but. But the story itself is kind of the thing that where it falls down for me this time. It's not like, oh, I can't handle a lack of story. I'm fine with a lack of story. But that to me is like you say, it's 2 hours long, could be 90 minutes. And it is this most simple story.
Right.
So, yeah. And it's just my lack of involvement. Now, we'll get to Longinot in a minute, I'm pretty sure. But I do want to say one thing. One thing I was looking at was, you know, the depictions of the Persians and, you know. And
yes, because I'd raised a pretty big red flag going into the movie about sort of my wife's interpretation of the movie, or at least her reaction to it.
Yeah, and I think a valid one for sure. Yeah. I don't want to tell somebody, no, this movie is not racist, when in fact there was
a lobster man.
I agree.
Who was that guy? But why did he have lobster claws?
But like, this is also one of those movies. There's kind of two things going on that don't necessarily forgive it, but put like contextualize stuff for me. Number one, the whole movie is told by a storyteller. It's objective point of view. It's a it's a guy telling the story, trying to convince people to fight.
Correct.
Which, you know, of course, is going to talk about lobster men and, you know, shit like that.
I mean,
that.
There was literally a goat man as well.
Goat man. And
so the mysticism.
So it's like
when
Jack Skellington comes to the town hall and is trying to sell everyone on Christmas and just makes up a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
It's sort of along those lines.
I'm always a fan of that thing, so I may be like giving it more than actually they were thinking of, but I do always like it when there's like a story being told and there's lies being spread throughout it, I'm always down for that storytelling.
Unreliable narrator.
Unreliable narrators. We've talked about this before. I love unreliable narrators. But there's another big thing that I realized in the beginning. It's like, oh, yeah, there's a whole racial element, a misogynist element. There's all this, and it's coming from the worst society ever because, like, the first thing they talk about is how they practice eugenics.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
yeah.
Right. We're basically talking about the master race before the Nazis showed up. So it's like, okay, so we're basically...
Yeah, it does open with a cliffside and, like, dead baby bones everywhere.
Correct. Yeah. So on the one hand, I'm like, well, they're racist, they're misogynist, they're, you know, they're toxic masculinity. On the other hand, it's they basically tell you in the beginning, well, look... This society has a very specific point of view. You can accept it or deny it, but if you're going to watch the movie, this is the perspective you're watching from.
Like, one of the weird things that stood out to me as, like, modern times, and again, the masculinity of it all, is that when he says goodbye, the narrator says, he doesn't say, goodbye, I love you, because he's not weak. I'm like, fucking loving your wife is weakness now? Like,
right. But then later on, like, somebody's son dies in combat, and he starts weeping, and I'm like, well, by the rules of this society, like, Gerard Butler should just walk up and say, you weep like a woman, and then cut his head off. Yeah. You know? So,
Gerard Butler's last words is like, you know, to his wife, and I love you, and it's... Yeah. So he goes against his own framing as well. So,
well, and I think, I mean, watching the movie, it's like, I don't think historical accuracy is a thing that they're even bothering.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And actually, so. I like the concept of a perspective and, oh, it's a tale being told, or even that there's like a tall tale being told. I don't get the impression from the movie that it's much concerned with delving into that too much. I mean, that's definitely an interpretation to me, especially with Zack Snyder at the helm. I don't see much more beyond this looks cool.
Yes.
As sort of like a motivation for anything.
Yes.
I actually would be really interested in some like myth versus reality kind of juxtaposition. But since the entire film is played with the same aesthetic, there's really no commentary like it's a lie or it's fanciful. Right. I mean, well, other than it just being so.
Yeah, and it doesn't visually change when the dude is telling the story because that would be a big...
That would be interesting.
That would be a big flag if suddenly the green screen disappears and we're in front of like actual...
Well, it's that there's a fantastic episode of South Park where they're playing superheroes.
Yes.
And once Butter, like everybody's this big giant anime thing... And then the second Butters actually gets like a throwing star in his head, and then it hard cuts to normal life,
right?
What
right.
it looks like for them, and Butters does have a throwing star in his head.
Yeah, everything just stops down. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That would have been great if that's what was happening here, where it's like the hordes are fighting, and then it's just like five dudes going.
Well, actually, I mean that's part of the. I would say that's actually part of the. If there's a failing of the film, that's part of it. Is that it doesn't take any kind of perspective like that. It just sort of like. Tells you this flat tale beginning to end and doesn't like really give you anything deeper.
Yeah. Right. I honestly think that's a lot of what changed for me this time. Besides, you know, my wife's criticism, I think that when I initially saw it, I was not looking for anything terribly deep. Like I was just enjoying the action and the fighting and that stuff, which used to kind of have me devil horns out, like really into it. This time I found a little fatiguing and just kind of tedious. Like it was fun and there were great action scenes, but that's kind of all it was for me. And then I found I would prefer now it to be a little deeper. Like it's a very shallow movie.
Yeah.
There's not really much to it.
Yeah. Its message is just that it's Rocky, basically. Never give up.
Sure.
And win. Like, and you'll win. Whether you actually lose, you have won because you never gave up.
Right.
That's the only thing this thing has to say.
Right. And it takes a while to say.
Yeah. And then it kind of sort of sprinkles in like, oh, we're free in democracy.
Yeah. Well, it has this kind of Remember the Alamo vibe of like they sacrificed their lives for this amazing story.
We're
that's
free.
Inspiring everybody.
Here's our king.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's part of the thing. I was like looking at like historical stuff too while we were watching. I was trying to do as much, you know, quick research as I could. And one of the things I was fascinated by is that the Spartans are depicted as in this movie they call themselves a democracy or that they're free men, but again, they have a king. They have slaves. They don't really point that out, but they are a democracy that enslaves men, which is like this sounds very familiar, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like you know, diametric oppositions that would be interesting to explore. And again, if they were just telling a story about themselves and how glorious Sparta is, and you find out at the end it's like, oh, it's just a story, it's propaganda, mm-hmm. basically, then that would help that, like, weird, you know, diametric opposition. But at the same, but it doesn't. Again, it's shallow. It's like there's all these, like, points that you could go, like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if? And again, this is based on a comic book that I think is going for something different.
Yeah.
And it's not a failing to be like, well, we're doing it like the comic book, so there's no more to it. But
yeah, if I'm in a, if I'm not mistaken as well, I believe the comic book has little to no text. I want to say it's
that would make sense.
A very, very visual comic. Like, yeah. I want to say there's like three or four pages that you're turning that it's just a picture book.
Right.
But I could misremember that as well.
Well, but I mean, I think you're right, though. There's lots of things that, like, in a movie, you see it in seconds, whereas in a comic book, you'd have to get that sense of movement and kineticism. You would have to have pages to have it. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm sure that the movie, I mean, it felt like the movie was taking stuff directly from the comic, but that also is the interesting, like, speed up, slow down, speed up thing. It's like, it was an interesting, because I feel like comic book movies up till then would just say, okay, here's a widescreen panel, mm-hmm. and they would sort of, like, have stuff happen in the panel. This is like, there's action happening, and then he would slow it down almost to the point of not, like, a freeze frame almost, mm-hmm. to show you the panel that really exists, and then go back into the action.
Yes.
So the action that takes place between panels in a comic, you see it, so you can actually watch, you know, humans doing stuff. That was interesting.
I think another big change for me in terms of then versus now, I think when I first saw this movie in 2007, I was way more comfortable with this very sort of black and white viewpoint of, like, here's the good guys, here's the bad guys. Mm. They are righteously good. These guys are insidiously, monstrously evil. They're totally within the right to defend themselves and just have this battle. And I think in the sort of, like, post Game of Thrones, way more nuanced world I'm in now, mm-hmm. like, I'm way more interested in, like, well, okay, you know, they're not all good and bad, right? Like, what's the Persians' motivations for coming in here, and why do they want to take this, and in what ways are these Spartans more flawed? And I think you're right, that opening where they're killing babies is probably about as close as we get.
Well, that, and it's like killing the messenger too, which is like a huge,
you know, it's like a faux pas.
Yeah, like throughout history you don't do that.
Yeah, so, and that's like, literally a saying, like, don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's sort of, I mean, it seems like a society on the verge of suicide almost, because it's like, well, we don't give a fuck, so we don't, you know, we represent anarchy, and it's like, well, that can't last terribly long.
Well, so. I, like, while we were watching the movie, it was interesting to juxtapose it with, I actually had, like, Wikipedia open, and I was just looking through historical stuff, and one of the interesting things about the entry on Sparta was they were like, yeah, this society basically sort of crumbled and fell down because they were so arrogant and so angry, and they refused to adopt to things that came. Like,
correct.
Apparently they didn't adopt currency.
Yeah, I read that too. I was like, they didn't,
as a
they
thing?
Did not accept, which is funny because half the people in this movie are paid in gold coins with Xerxes' face on them. But yeah, they didn't accept currency, and their society fell because they couldn't manufacture their own weapons. It's like, well, that's
so this sort of arrogance was like their undoing, honestly, which is so in contrast to the movie I'm watching, which is basically this, like, blind arrogance is your greatest strength.
Right.
And this refusal to bend the knee or do anything is like honored in the film,
right?
But in
bullheadedness is the best thing you could possibly have.
Yeah, it seems very pro, like, yeah, like, just non-compromising, we're gonna die on this battlefield. And obviously, you know, I mean, they're being invaded, I'm not saying they don't have cause to be angry, but yeah, it made me want the more kind of nuanced version of what I was watching.
But it sounds like at least the film is honest in that sense. If
certainly,
how they fell, then it's like,
yes,
that's who these people were.
It does seem honest.
Idiots
in
to
the
a fault.
Resolve. Definitely.
Yeah. Because they're still honored today. Like, the term Spartan, you know, is, it's still a legendary hero. And I mean,
correct.
Like,
there's that, but there's also the, like, use of Spartan in that you have nothing. Like, if you live in a Spartan apartment, then you have nothing.
That's true.
Which
that's
is
true.
An interesting, like, evolution of the word too, because it's like, well, if you apply that to this movie, it's like, oh my god, they have strength and they have balls and they got, you know, machismo. They don't really have much, do they? You know, they've only got that.
Yeah, is that a reference to how they fell then? Is that why? I wonder where the name came from.
How, wait, You mean
because
Spartan?
If they fell because they didn't have any, like they couldn't supply their own people.
Well, I'm guessing that it started as one of those words that like, oh, he lives a Spartan lifestyle. It's minimalist. He doesn't need much. And it's turned into sort of like, yeah, he lives kind of a Spartan lifestyle. Yeah. He's not got much in his life. So I mean, I think that's just one of those natural evolutions.
Yeah. I just think of like Halo, the Spartans and stuff like
right.
that.
Sure, sure.
So,
although I will say to my wife's point of being offended by the portrayal of Persians in the movie, watching it fairly, I will say there were times I was definitely like, this isn't really necessary. Or like, I think you can make the same point in the exact same movie and have them just be an opposing army. They don't have to be these like lecherous monsters.
Well, I think to me, the rank and file, like, Persians in the opposing army, they were normal humans.
Yeah, but you like demask somebody and they look like
I was gonna get to the point
basically.
The immortals, the like the elite crew, they're monsters for some reason. See, to me it was like up until the immortals showed
right.
up, when they had like one dude who's a giant and who looks like, you know, just completely disfigured, to me that's just like, well, this is like a David and Goliath story.
Right, right.
Again, it's from a certain perspective, he looks like a monster. It's only when the immortals showed up and it's just like there's vampires under the mask.
Yeah.
Am I like, oh well, okay, yeah. we're kind
and
of
then, like Lobster Man was the time where I was like, okay, this is just, okay, so Quasimodo's in this too or whatever. I forgot that character's name.
The
kind of Spartan who it was escaped in his childhood and now looks like the Elephant Man and is running around. There's a weird scene. I don't really understand his point in the movie. I'm having a hard time like tracking why he's there or what purpose it serves. Maybe you guys can help me with that. But he goes to this tent and there's this like Persian orgy going on of disformed people sucking on each other and all this, and he's like, bow to me and you will have glory. And I still don't understand like why that was in there.
Well, I mean, it's the devil's bargain, but it's like for what?
But it never comes of anything.
Yeah, no, what does he get by getting him on his side?
Well, no. So this comes from multiple watchings. So the idea is that, as you said, these guys throw away their babies if they're disfigured.
Yes.
So the mother didn't want that to happen, so she kept him and ran away. Therefore, their family is dishonored. He wanted to come to Leonidas to fight and die and earn honor back for the family.
Sure. He's rejected.
Yes. Leonidas gave him a speech that, you know, how the phalanx works. You can't do it, so you'll never die a Spartan, but you can still help us. So he throws that away and wants glory in another way. And then he mentions that there's a hidden goat path behind the Spartans.
Oh, okay.
That will lead them to
so
their
flanks. So he gives
flanks.
Them a secret entrance.
Yes. So he goes to King Xerxes. Xerxes showers him with
boobs.
Pleasures.
With burn victim strippers,
yes,
basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
With, yeah, the weird freak show orgy. And then he basically says, give me the... That's the real, like, biggest problem is, like, tell me where the hidden path is. Like, right. If you know there's a hidden path, it's not hidden.
Right. Yeah.
Just look for it.
It's not like you have to say certain words in front of a
yes,
door.
Yes, exactly. But that's the sort of trend they're going with. Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah. So then he gives him a uniform and stuff, and then he's there on the battlefield.
Correct.
And that's it, right? Like...
Well,
yes.
He basically is there for Leonidas to say, oh, shame, shame.
Well,
bro.
He says live forever because, again, it's the greatest honor for a Spartan to die in battle. So I hope you live forever.
Got it.
And you never die in a battle.
So is Spartan eugenics proved correct by this
yes.
guy being weak?
100%.
That's just kind of messed up.
It's just proving that like we throw away the deformed because one day they'll betray us. And
of course.
Yeah,
yep.
Well.
Yes.
I think we've 100%. Solved something here today. The other before I forget, it made me, you know, the Persian orgy made me think of like in the beginning, Gerard Butler and Lena Headey were having their love scene. And there were a lot of moments in the movie like this where like the style would like be so stylistic that it would just like it
made you laugh.
It made you laugh.
Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, there are other times where it's like, oh my God, you see the sword just splitting someone's skull and it takes 10 minutes in slow-mo. And it's like, you're laughing at that because it's just so like such a celebration of gore and what this it's like. This is just pure male fantasy where
yes.
it's like, you know, Cersei's getting railroaded by Gerard Butler. And oh my God, it's just like every
She's in every porno, basically.
Yeah, she's in every position.
And it's ultra slow-mo, too. Yeah. And I don't know if you guys have ever used a slow-motion camera, but it's like... When those things rack up, it's like, it's like a lawnmower. So you know, because it's got to churn through film super fast. So it's just to think of the logistics of in that moment where they're like, and action.
And also, it was preceded by a very similar scene that to me seemed totally unnecessary, which was the Oracle like stripper underwater right, thing. Yeah. There was like 10 solid fucking minutes of this woman.
Well, I think it was about 90 seconds.
Well, yeah. it felt like a very long time. Yes, 10
minutes
obviously.
I like the effect. I didn't like the unnecessary, like it's a clearly shot underwater, but yes. They took out all of the water.
Well, it just was so gratuitous to me. Which yeah. It's a gratuitous film, so I guess it's a hard thing to
say.
Does
gratuitous exist in this movie?
But like, she's just huffing paint and dancing around like nutty, and ultimately it doesn't even really matter because they're just like they gave them money to say whatever.
Yes, right? Exactly.
So it just seemed a tad unnecessary to me, and also the nudity was a little mutt. It's like why?
This whole movie can use a
that was totally
heavy,
the you know.
Heavy-handed editor.
I think Nick mentioned it's like a heavy metal cartoon. Everything is just like if you can show a boob, show a boob.
But these are all things, by the way, 20-something John had zero issue with. Like it was just like, But now, like, father of daughter, I'm like,
we brought this up in during the viewing, too, of Lena Headey. She has a very famous scene in Game of Thrones where she is nude, but she... took a stunt double,
body double.
Because I think this was her first and only nude scene, and it was just I could see being after if I was the actress after this and saw what was on the screen and be like, yeah, I'm never doing that again.
We had an interesting sort of almost sidebar watching the movie where we actually paused the movie and had this discussion about, well, obviously this actress later on in her life did not want to appear nude in things. And we all, I don't know how you guys felt. I felt a little strange watching it because I'm like, it has this underpinning of like, it's
very
she
voyeuristic.
Do this, yeah, or she she kind of maybe regrets this, or I don't know.
I mean, maybe. I mean, this could.
I mean, I'm projecting that. I have no idea how she.
Well, it could be one of it could be one of many things. It could be this is the movie that ruined that experience for her, and she's like never again. It could be that there were like three movies in between that we have no idea about that she had a bad experience on, and she said, "Okay, I'm never not having that clause in my contract."
Yeah, because the reason we're drawing this conclusion is because Game of Thrones very prone, especially season ones and two, very prone to nudity.
Yeah,
she like it was in the tabloids and stuff that very specifically she had a no nudity clause in her contract, and she was like the only one.
Yeah, and it could have just been as simple as like, well, she was one of the more name actors,
she came in with clout to make that agreement,
and she could afford that. And she saw which way the wind was blowing, and she's like, "I'm just going to get this out of the way now."
Yeah.
So that when it did happen in the show, it actually, because you weren't seeing Cersei just run around naked half the time, it actually had more impact because it's like, "Oh, geez, this is a big deal for her, and it's a big deal for us," which is what nudity in things should be. It's like, "Oh, well, that's a big deal," or if it's not a big deal, there should be like a. I mean, honestly, the Oracle didn't bother me as much because the Oracle to me was just like, well, she's obviously just, you know, entranced by the mystics.
Sure.
And you know,
I mean, it didn't upset me, to be fair. It was more just like, well, this is wholly unnecessary.
Well, to me, that was, I mean, it obviously, any showing of nudity in a movie is going to be titillating to somebody. But to me, that was actually a better use of it there, where it's just like, oh, she's sort of wearing this shifty gown and it's going on and off her. And I mean, yes, it's there for titillation because it's Zack Snyder, we know this, but at least you could say, well, in context, she doesn't give a fuck because she's been taken by the spirits.
Then to go
to Cersei and have her, like,
because it's not 10 minutes later. It's not like we've like, it's not like somebody was on the script being like, we need a nude scene every 15 pages or something like that, because it's not even that far between those two scenes. And it is 1,000% useless because it's him being disturbed that he just got bad news, that he can't go to war. And she gives him a pep talk saying, like, fuck them, do what you want to do.
The scene is resolved.
Yes, the scene is 1,000% resolved. It feels like the room where it's just like, and now the sex scene happens.
Yeah.
For zero.
Well, and I don't know. Even given, like, I come from the 80s where this
like
happened all the time.
Top Gun sex scene was more earned than this one.
Well, even just like, okay, and, you know, they have their moment, they have their scene. It really turns them on that they talk this way to each other. They have sex. Boom, the end. But they went on for, you know, a long time. And every position, upside down. Yeah. So it's just like, come on.
In the movie, they're husband and wife. It's not like, oh, this is a love story that we've been tracking in this movie, and here's their first time laying together. It's like, this is like, they have a child. Like, I just feel like a peeping
Tom.
And
again, it's like, it's... If I should try to give them what they're going for, I think they're trying to say this is what he wants to fight for and will die for.
Right.
Yet we take that away. But we take it all away again in the next scene when he can't say I love you. So it's like, well, then what the fuck are we doing here? You can't say he does all this for his love and country, and but then he can't say I love you. It's a bunch of bullshit.
Well, and again, there's so many examples of this being a stunted society, too. I mean, up and down, there's examples. You know, people are, they're going to war. They're not getting, you know, what they need. All these examples are just like, well, if you would just, like, negotiate for 10 seconds instead of being all or nothing. But they never, like you say, they never give it that subtlety. They all just say, well, of course they have to be this way because doing the other way is pussy.
Yeah, and there's, like, a moment where, in the very beginning, when the... a messenger comes and she says something like quick-witted, and he said, well, how do you allow these women to talk to us? And only, you know, Spartan women can give birth to Spartan men.
So you're like, real men.
Yeah. So you're like, oh, okay, women have a different point in this culture, I guess. That's what we're setting up. And then you just knock that down, like you set up one pin and knock down 35 pins along the way, and you're like, where are we going with this?
I mean,
like,
we mentioned it a bit, but the rape scene slash, I guess, I don't know, holding her body hostage scene later is very, I was just like, can we get back to the fight?
To fill everybody in, Dominic West, who was McNulty in The Wire, I forget his name in this movie, but
I think they do say his name, but
yeah, he's like the sleazy politician who's been like saying, hey, we shouldn't go to war, and he's been kind of working behind the scenes. Turns out he's a traitor. But while the 300 are gone to fight, he's meanwhile going to Queen Cersei and saying, hey, you know, if you give me a little loving, then maybe I'll help the Senate vote your way.
Right.
And then he has the fight, and she's like, fine. And then he has the fucking nerve to turn it around and then say, oh, she was coming on to me.
Yeah.
But the best part of that whole encounter was that it becomes a rape, an unnecessary rape, where he's like, this will be over quickly.
Won't be over quickly.
I thought it was, this will not be over quickly. You will not enjoy this. And, you know, which she brings back when she stabs him with a sword. But that's, again, the only example of her taking agency. Well, I mean, her sacrificing to help the kingdom is, I guess, an example of agency, but it just shows that, like, well, women maybe enjoy slightly different status, but they still have I can, again, buy into in this society, but why not give
and
us
it's
that to
the
chew
standard
on?
Like, the only bargaining chip a woman has is her body, so therefore that's what's the only thing she can give up, even though she's a queen. And again, but we have established before that women have agency and power. But then they don't. So it's,
we're
talking about all the worst scenes,
right?
The shit you're supposed to be paying attention to.
Expect that kind of subtlety from a movie with literally just bare chested men.
But again,
you know,
that's why you just
screaming.
Axe that stuff out.
Right.
Truly, I don't know what's worse then, that you just have no women in the entire movie and they have no purpose. That's the mental gymnastics that you
right. Yeah. Well, I've kind of brought a lot of the sins to bear. What did you guys still like about it? Like, what was still working?
The style is amazing.
It did grow a little long in the tooth at the end, but I still like that action. That, like, especially the first time they go out, like, they break ranks and do it, and you follow Leonidas for like a solid 30 seconds. And he's doing like a spin.
Sequence. That was well done. Like the first kind of almost, I doubt it's one take because they probably blend stuff together, but it seemed like one shot of him just running.
And it's still, I think, I don't know what they did. If I was trying to watch, and it looks like almost like, I would like to see a behind the scenes if they have like half swords the entire time, because they do have some like pretty graphic and accurate, like, looks like they're really hitting dudes and stabbing dudes, but I think like the tips of those spears and everything don't really exist,
right? They're all just
one
CGI.
Would hope.
No I mean, you know what
he's
I mean
just that, actually killing everybody.
That's how they made it look real.
Yeah.
But it just, it still was convincing, you know, CG and everything for this much time later. And as I said in the beginning, I still appreciate the sound work in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, anytime they drop their shield, it's like,
yeah,
feels like it's 600 pounds. And anytime he puts down his spear, it's the thunderclap.
Yes. Well, I also liked it when they would, I mean, either side, when they would, like, just completely cartoon up thing. Like, they saw a rhino at one point, and the thing looked 40 feet tall,
yeah,
and it's like done up in chains and everything, yeah, else, and it's just this amazing monster. That to me is one of those best examples of, like, well, they're probably, you know, in real life there was a rhino and it was, you know, half the size of the dudes in it, but it scared the shit out of them. Mm-hmm. And so stuff like that, and the arrows when they throw them in the air, yeah, at the initial barrage of arrows. At first, it's just like, oh, there's some arrows. And then they just keep, like, hundreds upon hundreds of them forming just a blackout.
Yeah.
You know, stylistically, that's really, it wouldn't happen in real life. But I mean, stylistically, that was really cool,
sure,
to see. Stuff like that. I mean, the first couple of battles, it's like, this is great. But then they have to keep doing stuff. And I will say, it's not like they did the same thing over and over. But like you say, John, it's like, after a while, you just get so fatigued, you can't appreciate, like, well, there's another head rolling off the body. Right. And
I think I used to have more energy for that kind of thing. Like, I could have totally gone for, in the past, just like, fuck yeah, let's do it, wall to wall. You know, and I had no memory of the butt metal.
Well, like, it's like,
it's like two specific scenes where it showed up.
That was like a weird choice. I don't know.
I don't know. The music was actually part of it.
It didn't take anything away. I was just like, really? Like,
well, see, that's what I kind of liked, that they kind of jazz, you know, it kind of had a modern, you know, sound to it, because it added again to that, like,
well, and it seemed like it was composed for the scenes too, because the, like, it would sting on, like, actual physical hits in the,
right,
like when he hit somebody with the shield, right, they would hit with the music or something.
Well, I feel like we're grinding to that point in the podcast. Hey, Nick, what do you think? Did 300 ultimately hold up?
Yes, but with some stipulations of there's some laughably gratuitous, specifically the, as we talked about, the sex stuff and the absolute disregard for any woman character in this. They like kind of tried to make it successful but failed miserably, and the action gets it's incredible but overstays its welcome.
Right.
That being said, I still enjoyed my time with it.
Right.
You could probably do like a fan edit of this and take it down to like
Longino.
I'm going to go with no, for two primary reasons. One is just an age thing. I think it would still fly just fine if I was in my 20s or even teens. I find in my 30s, late 30s or in almost early 40s at this point, it's not what I'm looking for. So I think that's, I've changed.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hold up for me for that reason. And then second, to my wife's point about the sort of questionable nature of the portrayal of Persian people, Eastern people, I did find it a little troubling. I mean, you know, I understand the caveat of the point of view of the narrator or something. I also find it wholly unnecessary, and you could have the same movie without it. So I'm going to dock it for that.
Yeah, there's specifically like one of the very last lines in the movie where he says something. I forgot what the line, it hit my ear and fell off, but it was, he did say something about like, us the free will like destroy the meek, and like what he said.
There's just
he literally said lines that were just like that then. We made it this far. Come on.
Yeah. It just, whether intentional or not, the movie has this perspective of white people and otherness against us.
Yeah.
That I just, in 2020, I'm just not really ready to co-sign on, but that's just kind of where I'm at. But yeah, so I'd say no.
Well, and I'm in a weird place because it's like, I enjoyed, like you say, Nick, my time with the movie, and I agree with the caveats that you have, Longino. And I know I didn't enjoy it as much this time as I did the last time. That said, I still enjoyed it. I still think it's, unfortunately, one of Zack Snyder's better movies.
I'll agree with that. I do think it is one of his better movies.
And even though I don't know that this is going to be in heavy rotation for me, I'm going to say that it holds up, but it's got a lot of things working against it. And I think it ultimately, I mean, you could just brand it under the thing that Longino said, which is, it's kind of shallow. And I mean, that's the thing that kind of makes it the movie that
it
is.
Like, unapologetically.
Yeah.
So
that's why it almost works better in memory of just being like, oh yeah, that scene was cool and that scene was cool. And then you forget the stuff that's really not cool. Because I still, like, I am a sucker for those cool guy lines of like, where he's pointing out people, and it's like, you, what are you? And he's like, I'm a Potter. It's like, what are you? It's like, Spartans, what are you? It's like,
I mean, when he kicks the guy in the well, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's never not cool.
Yeah.
That's true. So I guess that's what speaks for all. This is Sparta. Nick, thank you for coming on the show. Where can people find you in the world?
JoeBlowGamer.com. You can see some of the videos we've made and the podcast that we do.
Yeah, and if you all want to follow Longino over to the Joe Blow Gamer podcast, he is a guest on there quite often, so check
Come
it out.
Come on down!
Yeah, check it out. In the meantime, what are we doing next month, Mr. Longino?
Well, Mr. Nelson, I thought long and hard about it. It is my turn, and I think we're going to watch a film, a Denzel Washington movie.
Yay!
A thriller called Fallen.
Ooh.
Which was the late 90s or maybe early 2000s. I can't remember.
I think it might actually be early 90s or mid 90s.
Mid 90s.
I want to say mid 90s.
Fallen.
Yes.
And we'll have a devilishly good time.
All right. Well.
Oh, boy. No, you're running that kind of show.
Sorry, Nick. If you want to send us suggestions or tell us why 300 is terrible and we should be ashamed of our racism, you can write us at holduppodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to holduppodcast.com and see all of our links to social media. And
send us in your Star Wars questions.
Yeah, we're going to do that grab bag.
Star Wars.
So he had two lightsabers, you say?
That's a running joke with me and Nick and everybody else. Two lightsabers. Ask us about it for the grab bag. You can get the story. All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time,
nobody move, nobody gets hurt.